Here I must make a note. While I was desultorily attending graduate school, I met in the coffee shop one day a Miss Myrna Minkoff, a young undergraduate, a loud, offensive maiden from the Bronx. This expert from the universe of the Grand Concourse was attracted to the table at which I was holding court by the singularity and magnetism of my being. As the magnificence and originality of my worldview became explicit through conversation, the Minkoff Minks began attacking me on all levels, even kicking me under the table rather vigorously at one point. I both fascinated and confused her. In short, I was too much for her. The parochialism of the ghettos of Gotham had not prepared her for the uniqueness of your working boy. Myrna, you see, believed that all humans living south and west of the Hudson River were illiterate cowboys, or, even worse, white Protestants, a class of humans who, as a group, specialized in ignorance, cruelty, and torture. I don't wish to especially defend white Protestants. I'm not too fond of them myself. Soon Myrna's brutal social manner had driven my courtiers from the table, and we were left alone, all cold coffee and hot words. When I failed to agree with her braying and babbling, she told me that I was obviously anti-Semitic. Her logic was a combination of half-truths and clichés, her worldview a compound of misconceptions deriving from a history of our nation as written from the perspective of a subway tunnel. She dug into her large black valise and assaulted me, almost literally, with greasy copies of Men and Masses and Now and Broken Barricades and Surge and Revulsion and various manifestos and pamphlets pertaining to organizations of which she was a most active member. Students for Liberty, Youth for Sex, the Black Muslims, Friends of Latvia, Children for Miscegenation, the White Citizens Councils. Myrna was, you see, terribly engaged in her society. I, on the other hand, older and wiser, was terribly disengaged. She had chiseled quite a bit of money from her father to go away to college to see what it was like out there. Unfortunately, she found me. The trauma of our first meeting fed each other's masochism and led to an affair, platonic, of sorts. Myrna was decidedly masochistic. She was only happy when a police dog was sinking its fangs into her black leotards or when she was being dragged feet first down stone steps from a Senate hearing. I must admit that I always suspected Myrna of being interested in me sensually. My stringent attitude toward sex intrigued her. In a sense, I became another project of sorts. I did, however, succeed in thwarting her every attempt to assail the castle of my body and mind. Since Myrna and I confused most of the other students when we were apart, as a couple we were doubly confusing to the smiling southern bird brains, who, for the most part, made up the student body. Campus rumor, I understand, linked us in the most unspeakably depraved intrigues.